Good morning. I will call the first meeting of the Conference Committee for the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order and just welcome all the members and staff and members of the public that are joining us. This is really exciting. We're going to start our work today to pass a historic housing budget for the state of Minnesota. And I'll turn over to Chair Port in a second. But, you know, we have two bills that share, I think, a vision where we make investments all across our housing continuum that'll have a transformational impact for so many citizens, so many communities across our state. And I'm just excited to get to work.
Thank you, Chair Howard. And I just want to say thank you to all the advocates and community members who have come to both of our committees this year and shared your stories. We really worked hard to craft a bill this year that was centered on the realities of the housing crisis and the housing needs that are facing our communities. And we hope this bill reflects that, which is why, you know, today we're making space again to make sure we're hearing from community. So thank you for taking your time and your energy to advocate for the needs of your areas.
Just some housekeeping, a pretty light agenda today. We're going to walk through with nonpartisan staff the spreadsheets and then take public testimony. And hope to finish by 11 here with session coming up. So first, we'll go to the walkthrough. I believe we're starting with Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be walking through the spreadsheet. Me and the House Fiscal Analyst, Joe Harney, will split it up. The spreadsheet should be posted and in your packets. It shows it's called the Housing and Homeless Prevention General Fund in Thousands. It shows the House columns and the Senate columns. And I'll note what the general fund target is for this bill. It is $1 billion above the base. And also note that both the House and the Senate and has been enacted Chapter 20, which was a $50 million appropriation. So that was part of the $1 billion target. So this bill spends $950 million in fiscal year 24 and 25 above the base, and then $50 million in the tails above the base. So I'll just note that. So the way I'll start going through the spreadsheet, I'll note the House columns and the Senate columns, and then there's a gray column kind of a little bit off to the right of center. That shows the difference between the House and the Senate just for fiscal year 24 and 25. I don't have a column for that in the tails, but there's only a couple differences in the tails. So I'll start going through the lines here. And when we work off this first page, it shows the total appropriations. So it would be the amount that's in the base and then about the amount of new money going to each program. So I'll start on line 7, which is the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program. The House has added an additional $50 million to that, and the Senate has added an additional $100 million to that program. So the difference is $50 million. And then within that, on line 8, the Senate has a carve-out of one-time $10 million for the Urban Homeworks Program. On line 9 is the Workforce Housing Development Program. The House has added $40 million to that, and the Senate has also added $40 million to that, so there's no difference on that program. The Manufactured Home Park Infrastructure Grants, the Senate has added $25 million to that program. The House is at the base level of just $1 million per year. Line 11, the Workforce Home Ownership Program. Here the Senate has added $35 million to that program, and the House is at the base level of $250,000 per year. The Housing Trust Fund program, the Senate has added $20 million to that program and has a one-time carve-out. Of that $20 million, $10 million of it is for limited equity cooperative housing grants. So there's basically $10 million going into the Housing Trust Fund overall program, and the House is at the base level for that. The Homework Starts with Home The Senate has added $5 million to that program, and the House is at base level funding for that program. The Bridges Rental Assistance Program, the Senate has added $10 million to that program. The House has added $2 million, and the House has also added $2 million in the TAILS for that program. The Senate, the $10 million is all one time. Under line 16, the Family Homeless Prevention Program, the Senate has added $50 million, and that's in the first year of the program. The House has added $75 million. And there are a couple carve-outs that I'll note here. On line 17, this was a governor's proposal to use $5 million of the Family Homeless Prevention Program for a landlord mitigation program. The House actually has $500,000 in a separate appropriation for something similar. Line 18, there's $10 million set aside for American Indian tribes. Now, this was part of the governor's proposal. And then line 19, the Senate also has $2.4 million carve-out for a neighborhood house. On line 20, the Homeownership Assistance Fund, the Senate has added $25 million to that program, and the House is at base level funding. The next three lines, the Affordable Rental Investment Fund, the Owner-Occupied Housing Rehabilitation, and the Rental Housing Rehabilitation are all funded at base level on both the House and the Senate, so there's no additional money for those three programs. Line 24, Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training, or HECAT. The Senate has added $3 million to that program. The House has added $2 million. On line 25, capacity building grants, the Senate has added just over $9 million, $9.17 million to that, and the House has added $8 million. The Senate has a couple carve-outs under the capacity building. Line 26, the Homeless Management Information System, there's $125,000 per year set aside for that. That is something that was in the governor's budget and has also been in the base for a number of years. The open access voicemail, $85,000 per year, is a set aside in the Senate bill. And also in the Senate bill, the community stabilization project for $445,000 is also a set aside within the capacity building grants. Line 29 is a new program that was proposed in the governor's budget for strengthening supportive housing. The House is at $5 million for that, and the Senate is at $40 million. And then there's the housing infrastructure grants for Greater Minnesota on line 30. The House is at $5 million, and the Senate is also at $5 million. And from here on, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Harney.
Chair Howard, Chair Port. Beginning on line 31 is a proposal for housing infrastructure cash. The House proposes $185 million, and the Senate proposes $100 million, the difference being $85 million between the two bodies. On line 32 is a proposal for homeownership investment grants. The House position is at $80 million in the upcoming biennium, and the Senate position is the same at $80 million. Line 33 is manufactured home lending grants. The House position is at $25 million. The Senate position is the same at $25 million. Line 34 is manufactured home park cooperative purchase pool. The House position is at $10 million, and the Senate position is at $10 million as well. Line 35 is local housing trust fund grants. The House position provides $7,700,000. And the Senate position provides $10 million with a $2 million carve-out to the Northland Foundation, the net total difference being $2,300,000 between the two bodies. Line 37 is the proposal for rental assistance, the Bring It Home MN proposal. The House provides $100 million in the upcoming biennium and $40 million ongoing in the TAILS. The Senate position provides $330,000 in the upcoming biennium and $20 million in the TAILS. Line 38 is a proposal for first-generation home buyers. The House position provides $150 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The Senate position provides $100 million, bringing a total difference between the two bodies at $50 million. Line 39 is a proposal for Family Stabilization Plan, the Build Wealth MN. That House position provides $2 million in fiscal years 24-25 and $5 million in the tails. $5 million is the Senate position, bringing a net difference of $3 million between the two bodies. I will note here that the Senate provides another carve-out for $5 million for the 9,000 Equities Fund. Line 41 is a House-only proposal for fee-based home purchasing program. The House position provides $10 million in funding. Line 42 is community stabilization for naturally occurring affordable housing. The House position provides $150 million in the upcoming biennium one time, and the Senate position provides $100 million in the upcoming biennium for a net difference of $50 million between the two bodies. I'll note here that the Senate has a carve-out of $30 million of the $100 million for the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. Line 44 is a position in both bodies providing $10 million for high-rise sprinkler system grants. Line 45 is a proposal for Lead Safe Homes. The House provides $4 million in fiscal years 24-25, and $5 million is provided in the Senate. Line 46 is a proposal for the Landlord Mitigation Fund. The House provides $500,000 one time in fiscal year 24, and Mr. Mueller touched on this, that the Senate proposal for landlord mitigation is in the Family Homeless Prevention Program. Line 47 is a housing mediation program proposal. The House provides one-time funding of $1.5 million in 24-25, and the Senate provides $4 million in fiscal year 24-25 for a difference of $2.5 million. Line 48 is the House's side of the ledger for the Northland Foundation, a $2 million one-time proposal. And again, I'll note that the Senate tracked the Northland Foundation carve-out under the Local Housing Trust Fund grants. So a similar proposal, just tracked in different places. Line 49 is the Stable Housing Organization Relief Fund, the House-only provision that provides $25 million one time in the upcoming biennium. And lastly, for changes, the Senate has a proposal for the Housing Cost Reduction Incentive Program, and the Senate position provides $2.5 million in fiscal years 24-25. Mr. Mueller touched on this from the top, but both bodies had a general fund target of $1 billion in changes in the upcoming biennium and $50 million in the tails. The House for Minnesota Housing Finance has $949,700,000 in fiscal years 24-25 and provides $300,000 to Minnesota Management and Budget on line 57. The debt service is the last position to cover that is in both bodies. The House on line 62 has a debt service enough to service $66,667,000 in additional housing infrastructure bonds debt, and the Senate position provides debt service to the tune of $250 million in new debt provided. And then lastly, the major difference between the two bodies is the House position provides a 0.25% metro sales tax for deposit in the Housing Assistance Fund, and the mechanics of that are happening on line 71 and 72. The House position raises $353 million in revenue in fiscal years 24-25 and $391 million in the tails. Chair Howard, your report. That concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Please. Thank you, Mr. Harney, and I believe Mr. Cope is going to walk through some items in the side-by-side, or potentially Ms. Painter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to take us through Article 2 through 6 of the housing side-by-side, starting on page R21. Section 1 in the House and Section 3 in the Senate has the same language. It gives the Housing Finance Agency the authority to administer the rent assistance program. On pages R21 through R23, House Section 2, Senate Section 8 is the rent assistance program. The House provisions are a bit different. They direct tax revenues. Pages R3 to R24, that's House Section 3, Senate Section 9, is the Lead Safe Homes grant program. The House has a pilot program, limits grantees to nonprofits or government units, while the Senate language prioritizes areas where there are high concentrations of children with lead poisoning and specifies that grant awards must be balanced between metropolitan counties and greater Minnesota. Pages 24 to 25, House Section 4, Senate Section 10, this is the same. This is the Minnesota Housing Mediation Grant Program to support community dispute resolution programs. Pages R25 to R26, House Section 5 and Senate Section 28 are similar. This is the Community Stabilization Program to preserve naturally occurring affordable housing. Pages R26 to R27 is a Senate-only provision, Section 26 of the Senate bill. It's the Housing Cost Reduction Incentive Program to reimburse cities for fee waivers. Pages R27 to R28, it's House Section 6 and Senate Section 27. This is a supportive housing program. The House specifies that funding is to increase alignment with housing development financing. The Senate includes supportive housing for those at risk of homelessness and allows funds to be capitalized as part of development costs. Pages R28 to R29, this is House Section 7, Senate Section 31. It's a Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program. The House codifies the program in their bill, includes manufactured home parks as eligible projects, and states that grant money returned is appropriated to the commissioner for additional grants. On pages R29 to R31, this House Section 8, this is a House-only provision. The Stable Housing Organization Relief Program provides financial relief to nonprofits experiencing significant detrimental impacts due to recent economic and social conditions. Pages R31 to R33, this House Section 9, Senate Section 30, the two bills have similar language. It's the First Generation Homebuyers Down Payment Assistance Fund. On page R33, House Section 10, Senate Section 32, these are similar provisions for the High-Rise Sprinkler System Grant Program. Pages R33 to R34, House Section 11, this can be found, the Senate language is in the rider on pages R12 to R13, so that's in Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 21. The two bills are similar in their language for local housing trust fund grants. Pages R34 to R35, it's House Section 12, Senate Section 35. It's a Home Ownership Investment Grants Program. The House requires the commissioner to consult with eligible organizations to develop forms, applications, and reporting requirements, and to develop a scoring system for awarding grants. The Senate requires grant awards to be distributed throughout the state. Pages R35 to R37, this House Section 13, this is a House-only provision. It's a first-time homebuyer fee-based home purchase financing program. Provides forgivable loans for down payment assistance to eligible homebuyers in census tracts where at least 60% of units are renter-occupied. On pages R37 to R38, this House Section 14 and Senate Section 36, this is a manufactured home lending grants language. The Senate specifies that interest earned and principal repayments must be used for further lending grants. Page R38, House Section 15, this is in the Senate rider language in Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 24. It's the Manufactured Home Park Cooperative Purchase Program. The Senate requires an annual report on expenditures. Page 38, House Section 1, Senate Section 14. These are similar provisions providing the bonding debt ceiling. Pages R39 to R41, House Sections 2, 6, and 7, and Senate Sections 15, 20, and 21 have the same language relating to refunding bonds. Page R39, House Section 3 and Senate Section 16 are the same. There's a minor change to the bond appropriation language. And page R40, House Section 4, Senate Section 19, these are similar provisions for additional bond authorization. The House language has two authorizations of up to $33.3 million each. The Senate authorizes up to $250 million. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Cope.
Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House on R40s continuing. House Section 6, Senate Section 40. These are the same. These authorize the issuance of refunding bonds. On page R41, Section 7 on the House side and Section 21 on the Senate side are the same. These authorize MMB to appropriate money to cover any refunding bonds issued under the previous section. Section 8 on the House side and Section 22 on the Senate side on R41, continuing to R43, are the same with the exception of there being grammatical differences between the House and Senate side. And on the House side on page R42, continuing to R43, there's an additional paragraph for MMB to appropriate the money necessary to pay the debt service on the second House authorization of bond issuance. On page R43, Section 1 on the House side and Section 1 on the Senate side, these are similar, making modifications to the rehabilitation loan program. The Senate also includes a grammatical correction on page R44. On page R44, Section 2 on the House side, Section 4 on the Senate side are the same, authorizing MHFA to use its appropriations to address housing disparities. Section 3 on the House side and Section 5 on the Senate side, again, are the same, allowing MHFA to establish special purchase credit programs. Section 4 on the House side and Section 2 on the Senate side on the same page are the same, authorizing MHFA to distribute funding to Indian tribes for any programs under the MHFA chapter. Section 5 on R44 is a House-only provision requiring MHFA and its funding recipients to provide translation services to persons seeking to access the funds. Section 6 and Section 11 on R44, continuing to R46, and then Section 9 on the House side and Section 12 on the Senate side on R46 to R47 make changes to the Homework Starts with Home program, which would allow that program to serve any families with minor children. Currently, those programs only serve families with school-aged children. Again, on page R46, looking at Section 7 on the House side and Section 6 on the Senate side, these are the same provisions making changes to the agency's manufactured home park infrastructure program, which allow it to issue loans as well as grants. Section 8 on the House side and Section 7 on the Senate side, again on page R46, make changes to the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program to remove requirements for sponsoring resolutions for nonprofits serving outside the metropolitan area and remove requirements limiting additional entities to provide services within the metropolitan area. Continuing on to page R47, Section 10 on the House side and Section 13 on the Senate side are the same provisions making changes to the capacity building grant program with the agency. Section 11 on page R47 and Section 12 on page R48 of the side-by-side are House-only provisions that make changes to the challenge program to make school districts, intermediate districts, cooperative units, and charter schools eligible recipients of the challenge program, and it makes some specific provisions for grants to those entities. Section on page R48, section 13 on the House side and section 17 on the Senate side make similar changes to the definitions for housing infrastructure bond program purposes. Section 14 and section 8, on page R49, section 14 on the House side, section 18 on the Senate side, make similar change or make the same changes with respect to the issuance of bonds with the housing infrastructure bond program, with the exception that there are some grammatical differences that you can see on page R50 of the side-by-side. On page R51 of the side-by-side, section 15 on the House side and section 23 of the House side make similar changes to the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program, which just add counties to the list of eligible recipients of funding. On page R52, section 16 on the House side and section 24 on the Senate side make the same changes to the Workforce Development Program. Section 17 on the House side and section 25 on the Senate side, again on page R52, these are the same changes to the Workforce Development Program. On page R52, continuing on to page R53, section 18 on the House side and section 29 on the Senate side, these make the same changes to an appropriation to the Affordable Rental Investment Fund, with the exception that the Senate changes are effective retroactively from July 1st, 2021. On page R53 through R59, this is a House-only article. This authorizes the imposition of a metropolitan sales tax, with the proceeds of that tax used to fund a local affordable housing aid program established under this article that you can see on page R55 through R58, and the remaining and 25% of the proceeds of that tax also go to fund the Bring It Home rental assistance program that Ms. Painter covered. On page R60, these are House-only provisions. Sections 1 to 4, running from R60 to R65, and section 11, which runs from R69 to R70. These sections remove Minnesota Management and Budget as an intermediary for certain deposits that go to MHFA to be deposited in certain trust accounts, and has those funds go directly now to MHFA. These also make the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency the recipient of Department of Health reports on new manufactured home parks that it licenses. And then for the year after these changes take effect, it requires Minnesota Management and Budget to redirect any payments it receives for these accounts to MHFA and to inform the payer that they should be directing future payments to MHFA. Continuing on Section 6, this runs to R66. This, again, is a House-only provision that prohibits municipalities from making zoning regulations that would prohibit the construction of modular buildings. On page R67, section 8, This is, again, is a House-only provision that provides that certain Metropolitan Council planning activities cannot form the basis of an environmental rights claim and do not require an environmental impact statement. Section 9, running from R67 to R69, this adds to the list of real property covenants that are exempt from the 30-year duration limit, affordability covenants made with a government entity, so covenants relating to affordable housing. On page R69, section 10 on the House side is the House-only provision making modifications to the Chapter 20 of this session's law, which was the $50 million appropriation to the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program. R70, Section 12 on the House side and Section 33 on the Senate side are similar provisions requiring cities to report on buildings that don't have, on high-rise buildings without sprinkler systems. The only change between these two sections is that the Senate also requires the reports to go to the legislative committees having jurisdiction over the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And then on page R70 through R71, these are similar provisions. The House side, section 13 and section, excuse me, this is R70 continuing to R72. These are comparable provisions. Section 13 on the House side and Section 14 on the House side on R72 require the establishment of a legislative task force and commissions MMB to conduct a study on expediting rental assistance. And then on R70, the Senate side, Section 34, in contrast, the Senate requires the commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to convene stakeholders to evaluate how to expedite rental assistance. And finally, on page R72, these are similar provisions in Section 15 on the House side and Section 38 on the Senate side, requiring a report from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on the employees required to be hired to staff the appropriation increases and programs funded by this act. And that concludes the walkthrough, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pope, and thank you to all of our non-partisan staff. Without that, I don't know if we had any chance to get ourselves organized and get ready to take this next step. So thank you very much. Next, we're going to move to public testimony. We do have quite a list, and so I would ask folks to keep their remarks to 2 minutes. My committee administrator, Adam Popo, will have a timer. And so if you hear a buzz, if you could just sort of wrap up your final comments so we can get to hear from everybody.
Good morning, Chair Howard, Chair Port, members of the conference committee. My name is Daniel Lightfoot. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League of Minnesota Cities serves the collective interests of 837 member cities across the state, and I'm glad I did not pull the short straw and got first on the list today, so thank you for that. I want to keep my comments brief. We did provide a letter that's in your packets that's much more extensive than the 2 minutes I'll spend up here. But I just want to thank both the House and the Senate Housing Committees for being really intentional about putting forward two, I think, very strong housing positions in both the House and Senate language. Really appreciate the attention to the full housing spectrum from shelter capital all the way up to new single-family owner-occupied homes and everywhere in between. The attention to workforce housing and specific issues in greater Minnesota is extremely important to our membership. Increases in funding for the Workforce Development Program as well as the Challenge Fund are very important to cities. We also want to highlight our thanks for the inclusion of some additional resources for Local Housing Trust Fund state matching grants. Local Housing Trust Funds have been extremely important resources for communities across the state, and matching funds for those will continue to bolster existing efforts and hopefully create new trust funds as well. And then lastly, I just want to focus on briefly on the language surrounding comprehensive plans, which was briefly discussed just moments ago. The impact of this language is extremely important for cities in the seven-county metro area. Clarifying that local comprehensive plans are not required to go through environmental review under the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act means that we're treating long-range planning the way that it should be. And long-range planning documents and comp plans don't necessitate environmental review due to their lack of direct and immediate impacts on a project. So we want to make sure that the clarification around that is that environmental review takes place at the project-by-project base level when projects are proposed, rather than having the requirement to do speculative environmental review in long-range planning documents. So I want to thank you for the inclusion of that language as well. Happy to stand for questions, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Up next, Mr. McMahon, and on deck, John Arago.
Chair Howard, Chair Port, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Scott McMahon with Flaherty & Hood, here on behalf of two of our clients, the Greater Minnesota Partnership and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Let me begin by thanking both bodies for including two critically important investments in Greater Minnesota, the $40 million for the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Grant Program and the $5 million for the new Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Program. These two investments will have a significant impact on housing development in Greater Minnesota. As you all have heard throughout the course of the session, the housing challenge in Greater Minnesota is significantly different than it is in the metro, in that the biggest area that we have the challenge is building housing for our workforce. As I testified in the Senate, the lack of workforce housing in Greater Minnesota is probably the single biggest economic development tool for North Dakota. And we'd like to stop that. We'd like our job expansion to happen inside of our borders rather than outside. And we believe that this investment will help us accomplish that throughout our 80 counties. With regards to the infrastructure program, there is some slight variance in the language between the House and Senate bill. We would encourage you to adopt the House language. It expands it a little bit more to include the housing parks, which we think will add another tool to our toolbox out there. We would also encourage you to adopt the Senate language and the governor's position on the challenge grant. It's the single most flexible program that MHFA has. It's one that our communities use frequently. And we think that by putting more dollars into a flexible pot, then we have the ability to lift up all communities where their particular needs are. We did provide a letter with a couple of recommendations for the committee. One that I do want to hit on is within the community stabilization program. One of the things we run into that's in the spirit of what you are trying to accomplish with this is that at times our cities come into possession, not out of great desire of their own, of single-family homes through tax forfeiture situations when there's not a buyer that buys them. The city takes over them. We don't want to have those properties. We'd like to get them back into the housing stock. If we can put, you know, $20,000, $30,000 into that house, we can get it back into the housing market. We believe by expanding that program with the language that we provided in our letter will allow another category of housing to get, we'll get more single-family houses back into our affordable housing stock. So we appreciate the opportunity to work with the committee in the coming days as you put together the final bill. And as Daniel mentioned, we're happy to answer any questions the members have. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Howard and Chair Port and members of the conference committee. I am John Arago. I'm the Director of Equity Investing and Fund Manager at Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. We are a nonprofit charitable funder of affordable housing through all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota and have financed over 20,000 units of affordable housing over the past 27 years, usually in close coordination with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I am speaking in support of the Community Stabilization Program section of the bill, which is drafted to provide $100 to $150 million for fiscal years 2024 and 2025 to preserve Minnesota's supply of naturally occurring affordable housing, or NOAA, market rate but affordable housing that serves our lowest income residents, but that's also at risk of loss. We estimate that this bill would preserve the affordability of up to 6,000 NOAA units statewide. As you know, this bill has the strong support of the governor and both the House and the Senate. Greater Minnesota Housing Fund stands to help and work in close partnership with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to expedite the deployment and timely delivery of these critical NOAA preservation funds. given our organization's experience with the NOAA Impact Fund deploying private NOAA capital, typically on a very fast timeline, market rate speed, 60 to 90 days for a typical multifamily real estate transaction, to be competitive with the speculative buyers that are buying these NOAA properties and upscaling them, thus losing their affordability. This market rate but affordable housing comprises upwards of 70% of all affordable housing statewide. It is generally well managed and maintained, but due to its age, often has the lowest rents in the market. The critical issue at stake is that this older, naturally affordable housing is at risk of loss due to speculation by investors, largely from outside Minnesota, who are buying and upscaling these properties, thus displacing the lower income residents. This is not only a social justice issue, but an economic development issue, as the previous speaker touched on. We have mapped over 200,000 NOAA units statewide occupied by households at or below 60% AMI in the Twin Cities metro area, but also in major workforce markets like Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, Duluth, Moorhead, and many others. We agree that new housing production must be a priority given our state's severe housing shortage and affordable housing crisis. However, in just the Twin Cities metro area, we lost about 52,000 NOAA units from 2013 to 2019, while in that same time we produced about 7,700 new affordable units. Minnesota will fall behind in its affordable housing goals if we do not preserve what we already have while also building more. We must do both. The proposed community stabilization program will provide much-needed financing on a consistent, predictable, multi-year basis that will enable our affordable housing system to go to work to preserve these NOAA units in Minnesota. We are grateful to the House and the Senate for moving this program bill into conference committee and hope you favorably consider it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Up next, Kelly Law, and on deck, Maeve Olson.
Chair Howard, Chair Port, members of the conference committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you again today. My name is Kelly Law, and I work with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. I'm here today in strong support of the conference committee's omnibus budget and policy bill. The investments and policy changes included in this bill match the scope of the housing crisis. As you consider your final bill, I'm urging you to include a minimum of $350 million in a combination of cash and bonds for housing infrastructure. With these investments, we have taken a meaningful step towards addressing Minnesota's lack of affordable housing supply. Large ongoing investments provide a signal to affordable housing developers that the funding is available to prepare and plan to meet our state's need for increasing demand for more affordable housing solutions. The policy changes included with the investment will ensure that families across the housing continuum of needs will have housing that is both affordable and accessible to them. With an investment of this magnitude, thousands of new units of permanently affordable housing will be built. As a founding member of the Minnesota CDFI Coalition, MCCD is in strong support of the Homeownership Investment Grant Program and Down Payment Assistance Program. Minnesota CDFIs that work in the homeownership space already support historically underserved and underrepresented populations at a higher rate than the private market and Minnesota housing. If we want to make real change in addressing our homeownership racial disparity gap, we need investments to follow the data. On average, 86% of households served by CDFIs in the metro area identify as BIPOC, with 56% in greater Minnesota. MCCD also supports the inclusion of funding for homeownership education, counseling, and training program, HECAT, workforce homeownership program, emergency rental assistance, and the Stable Housing Organization Relief Program. These programs are critical to addressing the full spectrum of Minnesota's housing needs, and we applaud the diversity of approaches included in this budget. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. We are grateful for the conference committee's continued work to address Minnesota's housing crisis.
Thank you. Next, we have Maeve Olson, and on deck, Pat Paulson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. My name is Maeve Olson, and I'm the lead campaign organizer at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. On behalf of Beacon, thank you all for your hard work on this year's housing omnibus bills. Both bills represent a massive investment that will move our state forward. Beacon is a leader in the Bring It Home Minnesota campaign. We applaud the Senate and the House for taking the bold step of establishing a new Minnesota State Rental Assistance Program. We are committed to working past this session to advocate for a robust program that serves the full need, but we are so excited to see this movement in this area right now. We know that vouchers genuinely transform lives, and so we want to thank you for taking this important and historic step. Beacon greatly supports the Metro sales tax presented in the House bill. This new tax will create the ongoing dollars that are needed for this transformational program to continue into the future. Please support and pass this tax for the life-saving vouchers it will create and the necessary local aid it will provide to cities and counties to build more homes. We need this ongoing funding, and many low-income and currently homeless households are depending on you. Beacon also supports the $40 million presented in the Senate bill for the new Strengthen Supportive Housing Funds, which fill a gap critical to supportive housing success and pay for a 24/7 front desk, enhanced security services, and on-site service coordination. These services are core components of the wraparound services provided by supportive housing providers. We also support the Stable Housing Organization Relief Fund at $25 million presented in the House bill. Beacon knows the difficulties we and other nonprofit housing providers have faced during the pandemic, and that persists. Needs continue to grow, and investment is needed to stabilize this important sector that works for the community. We support your push for money to build homes, either through housing infrastructure bonds and/or cash. This is a critical resource to fund new, deeply affordable housing in the state. Thank you again for your work on this bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Next, we have Pat Paulson, and on deck, Anya McDonald.
Good morning. Chair Howard, Chair Port, committee members, my name is Pat Paulson, and I reside in Richfield. I'm a realtor, 37 years in the business, a past president of the Minneapolis Area Realtors, and current treasurer of the Minnesota Realtors. I've also served on the board of directors of the National Association of Realtors for the last 7 years. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the First Generation Home Buyers Down Payment Assistance Fund pilot program, which is in both the House and Senate bills. As an officer of the 22,000-member Minnesota Realtors, I want to thank you for prioritizing the First Generation Home Buyer Assistance in the bill and ask you to allocate significant funding for the pilot program as close to the original request of $176 million as possible. I've spent 30 years volunteering in home buyer workshops for various nonprofits like PRG and NeighborWorks. I've represented hundreds of first-time and first-generation buyers, many of whom are families of color, utilizing various down payment assistance programs. I further ask you to support the framework created in the bill for delivering the assistance, which leverages community development financial institutions along with tribal entities and nonprofit organizations across the state. These organizations are adept at providing the financial, counseling, and support services to ensure homeownership success for the recipients of the assistance. As you may know, Minnesota has one of the highest homeownership rates in the nation, yet one of the largest racial disparity gaps in homeownership. This funding will help reduce the gap and allow many families to experience the life-changing benefits of homeownership. In addition to assisting thousands of first-generation buyers achieve homeownership, another benefit of this pilot program would be that many of the prospective recipients of the assistance currently live in affordable rental units, which will become available for other families in need of affordable housing. The returns on the investment in this first-generation down payment assistance pilot program will extend far beyond the original buyers receiving assistance and will be both immediate and far-reaching into the future. My realtor friends from across the state are backing this bill as a statewide solution to a statewide problem. We thank you for your work on behalf of the people of this state and for your strong commitment to housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Anya McDonald, and on deck, Michael Gore.
Members of the Housing Conference Committee, my name is Anya McDonald, and I'm here on behalf of Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents the shared interests of cities in the 7-county metropolitan area at the legislature, executive branch, and Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today, and we also did provide written testimony to the committee. Metro Cities appreciates the work and leadership of Chair Howard and Chair Port on the omnibus housing bills this session. The House and Senate bills include important funding for state programs that provide vital resources to local communities for addressing a variety of housing needs. Metro City supports funding including in the bills for the Challenge Program, housing infrastructure bonds, local housing trust funds, a first-generation homebuyer down payment assistance program, and funding for a community stabilization program that will preserve naturally occurring affordable housing, among many other programs. Metro City supports the creation of housing aid for local governments in the House bill and the flexibility to allow cities to transfer housing aid into a local housing trust fund. Further, we support state funding for rental assistance included in the Senate bill. Metro Cities opposes language in the House bill that establishes a 0.25% metropolitan regional sales tax for housing needs. Metro Cities policies oppose substituting funding for programs serving statewide objectives that are traditionally funded with state resources, such as housing with local tax sources. Metro Cities also opposes substituting traditionally state-funded programs with funding mechanisms that would disparately affect taxpayers in the metropolitan region. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment and for your work on the housing bills this session. We look forward to working with the committee as this bill moves forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Gore, and on deck, Katie Topinka.
Morning. Chair Port, Chair Howard, thank you very much. My name is Michael Gore. I'm the president and CEO of Catholic Charities of Twin Cities. And let me just first say, this is a really great day that we're talking about how we can better serve black and brown folks who have been historically underserved in the housing area. So I want to congratulate both chairs and this committee. So thank you very much for this opportunity. So I'm here to really to speak to you about and also supporting one-time funding for nonprofit housing providers who have been significantly impacted by pandemics for the past 2.5 years. Catholic Charities, like many organizations, have been faced with significant budget challenges. And often when you talk about Catholic Charity, sometimes I think people will, think of us as a provider of shelter, but we also provide over 1,000 deeply affordable housing as well. And what I mean by deeply affordable housing, we're talking about an average of income level of people who are making less than $7,000 per year. So often we talk about affordable housing, deeply affordable housing. I think it also helps us put things in context the clients that we're serving in our community. That being said, what we do every day along with our partners are what we're talking about is safety net. We're the first ones to see folks who are looking for shelter and services, and we're the last ones to see that as well. And what we're witnessing now is that safety net that we're providing to our community members, especially for black and brown community members, the safety nets has a major holes that we want to speak to you about, and we were requesting your help. So during pandemic, a lot of us have fought really hard to keep our place open 24/7, especially organizations like ours who are providing continuum of care and housing. Along with that, we made sure our community members and also our staff were safe. Safe in a way that would adhere to all the procedures and policies and regulations, routinely cleaning, providing support to our clients, and making sure they have adequate food and shelter and services. Along with that, we'll also provided a significant assistance to our employees, time of crisis, where we'll provide them with paid leave, sick leave, when they're quarantined, and of course, significant expenses dealing with PPE. That has caused us a tremendous stress in our budget, where that all of us, a lot of us here today, are faced with a multi-million dollar gap that is not sustainable. So we're here to ask for your help and your partnership. In order for us to be sustaining our work that we do every day in our community, serving black and brown folks, we need partnership from the state. That funding is a pervasive challenge for us, and to the extent with the crisis, what it'll lead to us would be a closure of programs. And just let me remind the committee what it costs for our city and our individual taxpayers when the people are chronically homeless. Cost is exceeding over $40,000 per person, to which I think this is a significant investment that we have to make on one-time funding. So we're asking for your support. for all of us who are providing services today, right? Not today, not tomorrow, but today. We need your support immediately, making sure we get the one-time funding relief. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Next, we have Katie Topinka, and after that, Asali Sol Young.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Chair Port, and committee members. My name is Katie Topinka. I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of Minneapolis. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. There are many provisions in both bills that will make significant gains in increasing affordable housing opportunities both in Minneapolis and across the state. We strongly support the creation of the rental assistance program that's in both bills. More than 50% of Minneapolis households are renter households, and 73% of those households are experiencing housing cost burden, meaning they're paying more than 30% of their income toward rent. The Bring It Home Rental Assistance Program will help provide housing stability to Minneapolis renters. We are also appreciative of the different funding sources in both bills that will help increase housing production, including the investments in housing infrastructure bonds, the Challenge Program, and the Local Affordable Housing Trust Fund. We are also very supportive of the $100 million in funding for the First Generation Homebuyers Down Payment Assistance Fund, which will complement programming that the City of Minneapolis already supports to reduce disparities in the homeownership rates between households of color and white households. We are appreciative of the inclusion of $30 million in one-time funding in the Senate bill for the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority for the rehabilitation of the deeply affordable family housing units. And we also support the $10 million in both bills for sprinklers and high-rise buildings. Lastly, I'd like to comment on two provisions that we support in Article 6 of the House bill. We support the language that clarifies that comprehensive plans are not required to go through environmental review under the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act. Comprehensive plans are a policy document that set a vision to guide decision-making at the local level. A comprehensive plan is followed by other governmental or market-driven actions, at which point effective environmental review can and should occur on a project-by-project basis. This language would clarify any ambiguity that may exist to ensure that local governments can continue this valuable planning process without the potential for requirements that would be onerous, inappropriate, and impractical without any resulting benefit to the planning process or the environment. And lastly, we support the provision in the House bill that would allow state and local governments to require an affordability period of longer than 30 years. The City of Minneapolis invests in many different affordable housing projects, and we would like to protect that significant public investment in making affordable housing remain affordable well into the future. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Next, we have Asali Sol Young, and after that, Annie Shapiro.
Chairs and members of conference, thank you so much for your time today. My name is Asali Sol Young, and I'm the Executive Director of Urban Homeworks. As elected officials across the aisle have stated, without deeply affordable housing stock, families will still be competing for real estate in a market with limited low median income opportunities. However, Urban Homeworks is well positioned and deeply committed to making homeownership accessible to households within the 50 to 60% AMI range. But we need state funding to do this. This funding would allow us to build single-family homes and multi-unit mixed-income properties such as cooperatives and condominiums. This funding will cover the organization's gap, which is the difference between the cost of building a house and the price at which we sell it. For example, in this market, it costs roughly $450,000 to construct a new home, but we will sell it for roughly $150,000, making it affordable to a 60% AMI buyer. This is a $300,000 loss that the organization typically absorbs and must fundraise to remain sustainable. With current funding opportunities, we build 5 to 8 new homes a year. This carve-out would allow us to build an additional 15 deeply affordable homes annually. We're preparing now for this increase in projects, which will include hiring additional staff to bolster efficiency to start work immediately. Corporations with capital that prioritize their gains over community stability will continue to exacerbate the home ownership disparity. Unlike for-profit developers, we are committed to affordability. Unlike for-profit developers, we center community stability. Unlike for-profit developers, we hear from and listen to those we serve and make investments in neighborhoods that have experienced significant disinvestment and extraction. We ask that you recognize that unless there is more housing stock for low-income buyers, other initiatives before you today will have limited impact. Folks need houses to buy that support their economic stability, not homes intended for those of higher means that would continue to cost burden them, make them house rich but cash poor, and lead to foreclosures. We all know the impact that that has on a family and a community. Let us work together to create a comprehensive approach to ending homeownership disparities in Minnesota. Thank you so much for your leadership and partnership in this session. We are incredibly grateful for those things, and we look forward to executing this work. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Annie Shapiro, and on deck, Julie Guggen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members. My name is Annie Shapiro, and I am a policy co-chair for the Homes for All Coalition. Homes for All is a statewide coalition made up of over 270 organizations, many of which you're hearing from today, that covers the full continuum of housing from services for people experiencing homelessness to affordable homeownership. First, I want to thank both the Senate and the House and the chairs for passing $1 billion for housing that would make significant and long-lasting impacts on the lives of Minnesotans across the state. This bill truly is a game changer in housing. You have heard many provisions talked about that Homes for All supports and that are on our agendas, and I'm not going to repeat those provisions, and we'll provide more information in writing. Instead, I want to urge this conference committee to make sure that the final bill that you produce is holistic, just like the bills that came out of the House and the Senate. We have housing crises across the state, and we need to make sure that this bill is able to address all of those. That includes additional funding for rental assistance to make sure that Minnesotans can find and maintain a safe and affordable place to stay. That means we need to preserve and build more so that we have more housing stock so that people can find the housing that they need. And that means that we need to invest in affordable homeownership opportunities so that we can reduce the racial homeownership gap and particularly find ways for Black Minnesotans and other Minnesotans of colors to access homeownership, which has been out of reach for years. That is of critical importance. We know $1 billion is game-changing, but we also know that it's not going to address all of these crises. So we look forward to, in the future, continuing to find ways to make a dedicated revenue source for funding revenue source for housing in the future, because we know that these crises are not going to go away, even though this is a game-changing bill. Thank you so much, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, Julie Guggen, and on deck, Tom Brace.
Chair Howard, Chair Port, members of the committee, I'm Julie Guggen, the president and CEO of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. We're a nonprofit intermediary leading and convening stakeholders on policy and programming for affordable homeownership. For our legislative efforts, we partner with Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Together, we are intent on reversing homeownership injustice and averting the threats posed by homeownership challenges to individual households, our communities, and our collective economy. We applaud the homeownership investments outlined in the bill. Two are particularly important for addressing the racial homeownership gap in Minnesota. Number one, additional investments in homeownership education, counseling and training, or HECAT. This will allow our community-based organizations around the state to empower more households to achieve successful, sustainable homeownership for their families, ensure the delivery of culturally informed practices, and support targeted outreach to BIPOC communities. Secondly, the First Generation Down Payment Assistance Program, developed side by side with the Minnesota Realtors and in coalition with industry stakeholders and community members, this program will bring critical, meaningful support statewide to those who have been historically left out of homeownership. Our work is endorsed by a multitude of organizations representing diverse interests, demonstrating the ubiquitous call for innovative, responsive change to how we collectively think about empowering homeownership in Minnesota. The First Gen program is aimed to serve thousands of homebuyers. It will provide entry support in a form that's accessible, efficient, and that reflects the ever-increasing need for entry assistance in this housing environment. Our approach is additive, supplementing other solid programs available. The First Gen program would be administered by community development financial institutions, tribal entities, and qualified nonprofits, all of which excel at and specialize in reaching households underserved by traditional financial institutions. We thank you for your leadership on these important initiatives, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Next, we have Tom Brace, and on deck, Libby Murphy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Brace. I'm the former Minnesota State Fire Marshal and currently am the state coordinator for the Minnesota chapter of the National Fire Sprinkler Association. I would like to thank Chair Howard, Chair Port, authors Senator Muhammad, Representative Neuer, and all of you for your leadership in making high-rise housing safer with this bill. I'd also like to recognize the previous efforts after the November 2019 fire that broke out on the 14th floor of the Cedar High Apartments, which had a tragic death of 6 people. It has been widely recognized that those deaths could have been prevented if the building had been sprinkled. This bill provides funding for grants as an incentive to retrofit fire sprinklers to high-rise residential buildings. The grants will provide a significant contribution to the cost of this valuable public safety tool. The reporting requirements from cities to the state fire marshal is critical to inform the state as to the number of unsprinklered high-rise buildings. Great efforts have already been made by the League of Cities, the State Fire Marshal, and the National Fire Sprinkler Association to survey the need, but there still remains some unanswered questions. Again, our sincere thanks for the support of this very critical public safety bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Libby Murphy, and on deck, Sue Watlov Phillips.
Hi, my name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at Minnesota Housing Partnership. I've testified before both the House and Senate committees on a number of proposals on the bill, so I'll keep my comments. I'll just highlight a few provisions and our positions on some of the differences in the bills. We urge the committee to support the Senate's position on the Challenge Fund program, the $100 million. We urge the committee to support the level of investment in the language that the House proposes on community stabilization. We also support the House's investment in SHARE. We urge the committee to align with the House on the funding level proposed for the FHPAP program and support the Senate set aside for tribal nations. And we also encourage the committee to support the Senate's position on workforce homeownership. While that's in the House tax bill, we want to ensure that that program is funded and not left to the jurisdiction of the tax committee. Since testifying on the Metro sales tax provision, I have been asked, why does Minnesota need to raise taxes with a $17.5 billion surplus? Because too many Minnesotans are living in crisis. We have a multitude of challenges here in Minnesota, but I'm talking about the crisis that extremely low and very low income families live day to day. Families are sleeping on streets, in cars, they're doubling and tripling up, and they're living in substandard housing. They're living in squalor. And this is due to the insufficient supply of affordable homes and rental assistance. And the situation is unconscionable. It is terrible policy. It is terrible housing policy, social policy, and economic policy. And to be very clear, it is in large part the result of allowing some to benefit from disinvestment and policies that have restricted growth. I don't want to take away from the fact that $1 billion is a significant investment. This conference committee's final report will invest in ways that will transform lives. It will transform how people know home, and it will transform and improve other social and economic indicators, because housing is the foundation. This bill will tackle multiple injustices and inequities. We will support businesses. We will create direct and indirect jobs, and we will expand our economy through the proposed investments. But the report's final recommendations will not help all Minnesotans out of crisis. And they are not in a crisis because they are lazy or because of bad life choices. the vast majority of people who are without home or experiencing housing insecurity are doing so because they simply cannot afford housing. There are simply not enough homes. Thus, the proposal to increase the sales tax is not only comprehensible, it is morally imperative and sound policy that more than two dozen local elected officials across the seven-county metro area support. And while a sales tax is regressive, housing costs are regressive. More than 88% of households making less than $53,000 are paying more than half of their income on housing, whereas only 4% of households making more pay half of their income on housing. We are silently taxing very low and extremely low-income households as a result of disinvestment, stagnant investment at the state level, and policies that have restricted new development. MHP is a member of the Our Future Starts with Home effort, which is advocating for a statewide solution. We would urge the committee to work with us on incorporating some language that we've developed in partnership. And then lastly, I do hope that $1 billion a biennium becomes the new normal, the new floor. Government investments in housing work, and they are truly transformative when they are to scale. We saw this with the GI Bill. White men and their children, grandchildren, and even their great-grandchildren have built wealth and accessed opportunities built on the foundation of generous, dignified housing benefits and coordinated government actions. So thank you, members, for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Sue Wetlaw Phillips, and on deck, Patty Paulson.
Good morning, Chair Port and Chair Howard and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again today. My name is Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the Executive Director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. We have over 100 organizations working with us and over 1,700 people across the metro area wanting to create welcoming communities where everyone has a place to call home. It's been my honor to serve God over the last 55 years working with people experiencing homelessness, housing instability, and discrimination to prevent and end homelessness and to ensure that everyone, without exception, has a home. I also experienced homelessness in the early 1970s as I got hurt in sports while I was competing in sports at the University of Minnesota. So I praise God and I thank you for this historic and balanced approach of investing $1 billion of our abundance into the continuum to housing, including funding for community mediation, prevention, rental assistance, preserving and creating safe, decent, accessible, stable homes, rental, manufactured homes, and home ownership affordable at people's income and that will meet their needs. This is really critical. And as the previous speaker just said, this is so important. $1 billion is a big step forward, but we need to be talking about $2 to $3 billion a year. Each session to be able to really move us forward in really addressing the needs. I want to thank you also for including the Lead Safe Home Bill. It's also called the Dustin Luke Shields Bill. Dustin was permanently disabled by lead paint. Now, we understand that this is a new program, and I know that Minnesota Housing has some concerns with the number of new programs potentially that may come out of this conference committee. And so I encourage you, as you're looking at the language, is to make it as easy for them to administer it and to potentially connect it with some of the prevention programs and rental assistance program like we did with the risk mitigation program. We need to recognize one in every three homes in Minnesota has lead paint. And we have the opportunity through the Lead Safe Homes Bill to prevent potentially thousands of our children from having their tiny brains permanently damaged by lead paint. On behalf of the thousands of people who have experienced homelessness as myself or at risk of homelessness, experiencing homelessness now, and living in unstable and affordable housing, thank you for your work and this historic investment. We from the interfaith community will continue to keep you in our prayers as you negotiate this final language and the funding levels, as we all continue to work together to bring everyone in Minnesota home now. May God bless you and guide you in these important decisions, which are oftentimes life and death for many of our folks that are out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Patty Paulson, and on deck, Kizzy Downey.
Hi, I'm Patty Paulson, the Neighborhood House Housing Stability Director. Good morning, chairs and members of the committee. And thank you for allowing me to testify this morning. Neighborhood House is in support of the Senate position and language for the one-time appropriation of $2.4 million to Neighborhood House. It appears that this funding will be coming through Minnesota Housing and the Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program, or FHPAP. Neighborhood House is already using FHPAP funds. And in February, we had a site monitoring visit with zero findings, and any recommendations that we were given have already been put in place. We know about the criteria, how to go about it, and all of the things that are required. Neighborhood House is the only community agency attending Ramsey Housing or Eviction Court, and currently there is a record of 500 evictions being filed every month. These are record numbers, and they are not going down. We at Neighborhood House are also seeing an increase of over 63% or over 100 families per month reaching out to us outside of the court system for assistance. Neighborhood House looks to assist in three areas: prevention, evictions, and rehousing, making homelessness rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. Neighborhood House assistance doesn't just assist the families that are in need, but this also provides additional funding, or the funding for the landlords and the property owners that they are required. If awarded the $2.4 million, Neighborhood House anticipates that we can assist 800 to 1,000 more families over the next 2 years. And our record shows that 77% of the families assisted by Neighborhood House are still in their home 6 months after receiving the one-time financial assistance. We urge you to adopt the Senate position and language regarding the $2.4 million in appropriations to Neighborhood House. Thank you again for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Next, we have Kizzy Downey, and on deck, Mary Tingerthal.
Thank you, Chairs Port and Howard and committee members for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Kizzy Downey, and I'm the CEO of Model Cities here in St. Paul. Model Cities is a 55-year-old nonprofit service provider and affordable housing developer that increases shelter and housing access for nearly 2,500 individuals each year. Located in St. Paul's Frogtown Summit University neighborhoods, we own and manage 72 affordable housing units that served 170 parents and children last year. 100% of our units serve households at or below 60% of the area median income, and over 50% of those households have experienced homelessness. We are proud to say 90% of our residents maintain housing stability each year, and at least 75% maintained or increased their income. I am here today to speak in support of the Stable Housing Organization Relief Program, which provides one-time funding to organizations that provide affordable housing and services to the lowest income households across the state. The pandemic has impacted our residents in profound ways: mental health, domestic violence, joblessness, stress. This has always been true among our residents, but it became even more apparent in the last 3 years. We have worked tirelessly to keep our residents housed with high-quality services throughout the pandemic, and we, along with a lot of other service providers in this room, have done a great job in an extremely challenging environment. However, the compounding of dramatic cost increases with inability for some residents to pay their rent created significant financial challenges for our organization. We know this trend will continue for at least the next 2 to 3 years, and we, as a small community-based affordable housing developer, simply cannot sustain additional significant loss. These resources will translate directly into more stable housing for our community, including our residents, through expedited building maintenance, strengthened security, critical supportive services, and rental support that will provide an improved resident experience. Thank you all for your support of this desperately needed legislation.
Thank you. Next, we have former Commissioner Mary Tingerthal, and on deck, Marcus Schmidt. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the Housing Conference Committee. I want to congratulate you on arriving on the doorstep of making a truly historic financial commitment to affordable housing in Minnesota. My name is Mary Tingerthal, and I come before you today to implore you to keep and to increase by as much as possible the appropriations for the Stable Housing Organization Relief Program, sometimes referred to as SHARE, that's contained in the House bill And I hope that you have it in your conference bill as you report it out from this committee. I've spent much of my career dedicated to providing more housing that's more affordable to more people. I've worked nationally on this, as well as in Minnesota, as your housing commissioner from 2011 to 2019, but also as a volunteer board member and donor to many of the organizations that do this work. Minnesota is blessed with a strong group of companies that have been willing to develop, own, and manage affordable rental housing. And that allows us as a state to both keep what we have in affordable housing and build more affordable housing each year. We are especially blessed to have one of the strongest and largest groups of nonprofit owners of affordable housing in the country. Without these owners, Minnesota simply would not have the number of deeply affordable and permanent supportive housing units that we have today. Now those owners, both large and small, need your help. As you've just heard from Kizzy Downey in Model Cities and heard earlier from Michael Gore. Owners of affordable rental housing across the country have been hit hard by negative impacts. These conditions are now made worse by increasing costs and worker shortages. Nonprofit owners, because they are disproportionately providing housing for renters with the lowest incomes and the greatest needs, are hardest hit by these economic challenges. Without this stabilizing assistance, there is a real risk we will lose existing housing that's affordable to our lowest income renters. In many cases, these organizations can't raise their rents, and even if they legally could, many tenants would be displaced if they did. The organizations that would be eligible to apply for the funds appropriated by the SHARE program are not here because of poor management or bad decisions. They are here because we count on them to do the toughest job in housing, housing our neighbors with the lowest incomes and the greatest needs. I implore you to make a strong one-time investment in these important organizations. Help them to recover from unexpected and unprecedented financial stress and return them to being financially stable and the long-term committed community partners that we have all come to count on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Marcus Schmidt, and on deck, Abdullahi Farah.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I think I drew the short straw having to follow former Commissioner Tingerthal. Good morning, Chairs Portenhauer and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to share testimony on the legislation before you today. My name is Marcus Schmidt, and I'm fortunate to lead Hearth Connection, an organization that's uniquely positioned between government, direct service providers, and community stakeholders across the state. Our focus at Hearth Connection is supportive housing, where we connect direct service provider partners with resources to serve people with long histories of homelessness. For us and our 30 partners across the state, housing that is supportive housing is both a noun and a verb. You need the affordable, safe place for people to live, and you also need the support to help people find it and keep it with services that help improve people's well-being and stability. We know there's urgency in our communities, metro, suburban, rural, to provide long-term solutions for people with long histories of homelessness. Supportive housing is a proven long-term solution for breaking the cycle of homelessness. It's been tested in Minnesota and across this country. Simply put, supportive housing works. The Wilder Research and UCARE team, this report, which will be released later this week, digs into the barriers and challenges that make it difficult for people experiencing homelessness to get to those long-term solutions. Nearly 250 direct service providers across Minnesota contributed to this report. And the number one high-impact solution to homelessness recommended by our fellow Minnesotans is supportive housing. The Senate budget identifies $40 million for strengthening supportive housing in Minnesota. This necessary and timely investment will align funding and fill a gap that has undermined supportive housing projects across the state for too long. Please maintain this funding, the funding that's included in the Senate budget, so that we can help folks achieve and maintain housing stability. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share this testimony, and thank you so much for your public service.
Next, we have Abdullahi Farah, and on deck, Mark Bruner.
Good morning, Chair Howard and Chair Port and members of the Housing Conference Committee. My name is Abdullahi Farah, and I am the lead organizer and director of the Muslim Coalition of Isaiah. Muslim Coalition represents over 20 mosques and Muslim community centers encompassing tens of thousands of Muslim Minnesotans across our state. Muslim Coalition is pleased to see both the House and Senate make significant investments in housing this session. The inclusion of the first-generation home buyer purchase financing program is especially important to our communities because this program is so essential for families to help afford housing or home ownership. We urge the adoption of the House's position of $150 million in one-time funding for this program. This program will have an especially broad impact on our community as it can be coupled with the zero-interest lending product MHFA will be unveiling later this year that will appeal to those in our community who cannot use traditional mortgages for religious reasons. We're also excited about investments in the capacity building of community organizations. Too often, small community-based organizations that serve our communities do not have the capacity to take advantage of all the programs offered by MHFA, Minnesota Housing and Finance Agency. We're committed to partnering with the agency and you in the future sessions to ensure programs, our small community-based programs, can take advantage of this funding. With this in mind, we also know the importance of ongoing investments and funding as opposed to one-time funding. We look forward to the legislature appropriating more significant ongoing funding in future sessions. We highly appreciate the work of Senator Port and Representative Howard in pushing these important initiatives and look forward to seeing key investments in our communities reflected in the final Housing Conference Committee report. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Mark Bruner, and on deck, Dave Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Bruner, Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. I'd like to thank the committee for a number of the provisions that are in the in both bills related to manufactured housing and growing our supply of affordable housing stock. We represent the builders of manufactured modular homes. There are 15 plants in the state that build modular homes for that build manufactured homes. We also speak for the nearly 1,000 licensed manufactured home communities that are home to about 50,000 families. What I would like to address is something that we've been working on or continuing to work on, the House File 817, a bill that we've been negotiating and continue to work on with the North Country Cooperative Foundation, as well as the All Parks Alliance for Change, that I understand may still end up being a part of a final package that would give residents of manufactured home communities notice if their property is being offered for sale, as well as if they've received an unsolicited offer. The language that we've been working on seems to be acceptable to all parties, so hopefully at some point moving forward that would be incorporated in a final bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Dave Anderson, and on deck, Joel Hansen.
And Chair Howard, Chair Port, committee members, I can be very quick. My name is Dave Anderson. I'm the executive director of All Parks Alliance for Change, which is the state association for Minnesota's 180,000 manufactured home park residents. And as Mr. Bruner was talking about, we have arrived at a compromise on a notice of sale for manufactured home park communities. It wouldn't, it would just be to provide notice. It would expand on an existing notice requirement that currently only relates to real estate listings and public advertisements, which is almost never the way in which the communities are sold. It wouldn't require selling to the residents or pausing and negotiating with other buyers. Obviously, we hope
that the community owners would choose to sell to the residents. But as Mr. Bruner said, I think we have an agreement on how we can move forward with this with all parties being happy about it. And I'd like to thank the committee for what you've already done to support manufactured housing, and our authors, Representative Feist and Norris, and Senator Kunisch for bringing this all together. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your continued work on that. Up next, we have Joel Hansen, and next, Katie Arnold and Beth Bailey.
Thank you very much, Chair Howard and Chair Port. You've heard all about that compromise, so I'll focus on the funding items in this bill. So first, we want to thank both the House and the Senate for historic funding of manufactured housing in both of your omnibus bills. Specifically, we would like to thank both bodies for including $25 million for the establishment of manufactured home lending grants. That's on page R11 of your side-by-side. So this is bipartisan one-time funding that will utilize existing community partners to create innovative lending products for manufactured homeowners, including down payment assistance and rehab resources. Also on R11, we would like to thank both bodies for including $10 million for a manufactured home park acquisition fund. So this is, again, bipartisan one-time funding that will establish a revolving loan fund that Minnesota manufactured housing residents can access to purchase their parks, thereby ensuring long-term affordability and stability for the land underneath their homes. And then lastly, we want to thank the governor and Senate for including an additional $25 million for manufactured home park infrastructure grants and loans, line 10 on your spreadsheet. And this existing program, it's referred to at MHFA as the Manufactured Housing Community Redevelopment Program. That existing program had $9.5 million in awards the last grant cycle, $25 million in requests. So obviously it's oversubscribed, desperately needed. And I'll also add it's available to private parks, cooperatives, municipally owned parks, so any manufactured home park in the state can access those funds. So we would appreciate the inclusion of the Senate and governor's position. But again, thanks for working with us, and we'll continue to work with you as we move through the conference committee process. Thank you.
Next, we have Katie Arnold and Beth Bailey.
Good afternoon, Chairs Port and Howard and committee members. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Katie Arnold, and I'm the Director of Restorative and Mediation Practices and a member of Community Mediation Minnesota. Thank you for your commitment to mediation for all Minnesotans. We really appreciate that. The Housing Mediation Program portion of this bill will fund all six community dispute resolution programs, staffing 11 centers across Minnesota. We're hoping to attain the $4 million mark, if possible, to ensure that all 87 counties in Minnesota continue to be reached. The mediation model we use is a case management model where we work with people to prepare them for important conversations and then stay with people to fulfill their mediated agreements. Our courts are very overburdened. And in an environment where the cost-burdened households and mortgage-burdened landlords are driving court calendars, they're filled with non-payment of rent disputes. Over 90% of the cases in eviction court are of non-payment, and we're working to address these cases in a better way. Mediation is a win-win-win. Landlords are made financially whole, renters attain stable housing, and courts are less burdened. Thank you. I'll turn it over to my colleague, Beth.
Good morning, Chair Howard, Chair Port, and our authors, Senator Mohammed and Representative Agbaji. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Beth Bailey, and on behalf of Community Mediation Minnesota, and asking that the House adopt the Senate position of $4 million for community mediation. I began my career almost 30 years ago as a volunteer mediator in housing court, and 30 years later, our organizations have mediated over 30,000 housing stability mediations. One of the lessons learned from all of those mediations I'd like to draw to your attention. The eviction law that's in your domain is poorly suited to address non-payment of rent disputes. If you imagine a mediation, we have in one chair the renter, another chair the rental provider, and then two empty chairs. One of those chairs belongs to you, as the body assigned to write our eviction timeline, our eviction laws, and the other chair belongs to the resource providers. We have a two-week gap between the eviction timeline and the housing resource timeline, and it's causing tremendous pain. People are losing their houses. Rental providers are getting locked out, are locking in financial losses. And in Minnesota, we are losing that segment of our rental provider population willing to be in this private market. It's fixable. It's a two-week gap, and we beseech you to find ways through the legislation before you, including supporting housing mediation and join mediators who are laser-focused on addressing this two-week timeline that's causing tremendous pain. I would also ask, I know on line or page 70 and 71, there's an establishment of a task force. So in addition to moving toward the $4 million mark in the Senate budget, we ask that you add a representative from the mediation community to the task force designed to address the timing issue. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the members of the public that have signed up to testify. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? If not, we'll close this section. That does complete our agenda, and we do have a little bit of time. If there's any quick questions or comments that members want to make, we do have a little bit of time for that. I'll just kind of scan the room. And if not, we can adjourn today, and we just note for members to stay tuned in terms of a next meeting. We've got a lot of work to do, but, We'll give folks as much heads up as we can in terms of the next meeting. With that, we are adjourned.